Debbie Miller is RNIB's Chief Operating Officer. So we thought we'd sit down with Debbie and learn a little bit about the job and encouraging more blind and partially sighted people to move up the career ladder, what help and support can be put in there. And that's not just within RNIB, that's externally as well. Debbie, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Hi, Alan.
Tell me a little bit, Debbie, about your career so far. You're now at quite a senior level within the organisation, but how did you get there?
I feel like I've had a really good career, really varied, and I'm delighted to now be in the Chief Operating Officer role here at RNIB, because I have gone throughout my career with visual impairment and really had to lean into that and find ways to adapt and, importantly, help others adapt to suit my needs. So my first proper job, if you like, was selling mobile phones in the late 90s. Early noughties, but I loved it. What I mostly loved was connecting with customers and people and learning how to adapt my approach to suit their needs and ultimately with the sales in mind. But it was a really great way to get out there and be interacting with people every day. And then I moved into customer experience in contact centers. So play.com, sadly, they don't exist anymore, but they were one of the biggest UK online retailers at the time. It was really fast paced and demanding, but it was kind of new and growing organization. So the culture was one of everyone just gets stuck in and does their best. And we had a lot of fun. It was there actually that I started to have real difficulty with what I was able to see. And that was the first time I had a conversation with my boss about what I now call reasonable adjustments, but I didn't really know that's what it was at the time. She was great, and I was working with computer systems that I was struggling to see. I was doing my best, but that's when I first started exploring magnification tools. I didn't want to be slower than any of my colleagues, so it was really important to me to be able to keep up to speed. Love my career there. Then went to British Gas, a similar role at that point. I'd moved into leadership, so I was leading the contact centre. Again, a really good experience. But when I moved into that role, I sort of had my own tech. So I knew what tools that I needed to use. I'd been through Access to Work by that time. And for whatever reason, I decided not to tell British Gas at the time that I was visually impaired, because I could manage, for want of a better word, pretend that I wasn't. And I did that for quite a few years, and I did well, again, because I had the tools and the tech and I knew how to access it. But I remember I was quite anxious a lot of the time, and I probably worked like a lot harder than my peers, because I would have to do things before work, after work, just to make sure I kept up and no one found me out, which is a horrible thing to say. But I just really wanted to do really well at the job. And I think I was worried that people might think differently about me if they knew that I did have a visual impairment. But I'll never forget, my navigation and mobility was a bit hit and miss. And I remember being in a meeting room with a lot of other people. It wouldn't be like a brilliantly accessible environment, so there wasn't a lot of contrast going on. It was a white table and it was plastic water cups and fountain. And I remember I couldn't see where my cup was on the table. I was kind of thirsty, but I didn't want to make it obvious that I was struggling. So I just didn't have a drink. And I remember coming home that night thinking, oh my God, that's just ridiculous. I can do the job. I know how to do it and I can manage it, but I couldn't have a conversation to say, can you help me find where my cup of water is? And that was the turning point for me to tell my then boss I was visually impaired and that I did need a bit more help than they might have assumed. It took a lot for me to do that. And now I look back at that. I mean, that was about 15 years ago, and think that was bonkers. Why was that so difficult for me? And interestingly, when I did make that decision, that's where my career's grown, because everything became much easier for me. I wasn't holding the anxiety. People helped. They really did. No one, like, people didn't know how sometimes, but we could work it out together and just have really open conversations. So I was head of customer experience at British Gas, and then I saw a head of customer experience job at RNIB, and I knew RNIB because they'd helped me before. So I'd always felt like part of the family. And I thought, God, I could do that job for a cause that I 100% aligned to, slightly more than selling boilers. I crossed to RNIB about 4 years ago as a head of customer experience, came into the organization and remember just being totally blown away by the fact that everyone uses a size font 14. That was a game changer for me, coming from an organization where you're lucky if you get a font 8 or a 10. Again, I could Zoom and use Reader or what have you. But yeah, and it's just been great from there. So progressed from that role into the director of iCare Advice and Support. So looked after our helpline, our advice services, our Living Well services, and our telemarketing teams. And now I'm in this role.
It has been quite a journey, Debbie, to where you are now. For many people listening to this, some things will ring true about you, what you said about that kind of sight loss journey, if you like. And it did sound as if right at the beginning, you know, it perhaps difficult for you to disclose your sight loss. I think for many people, that's a question that comes up when you're thinking about even applying for jobs. You know, do I disclose on the application form? Do I wait until I get to the interview? Will I be forced to do it at the interview? It is a lot to think about before you even go down the road of looking for and getting a job.
I think lots of people have lots of different experiences about what happens when they disclose, which can then make you a bit more nervous or anxious. And it's really difficult to pinpoint, certainly for me, why I didn't always feel comfortable to do that, because I'm clear on my rights as per the Equality Act. I understand how reasonable adjustments work, and I understand how grants like Access to Work operate. Lots of people don't have that knowledge. Even despite that, there was still this anxiety about disclosing. And I think that is some of the system or societal change that RNIB, we really need to lean into. So I try and explain, it's almost like this veil, it's hidden. And then when you lift it up and you make that decision to explain what works for you, everything can get a lot better, but you have to be brave, really, and bold to do it. One of the things I found, again, this all sounds bonkers now, given the role I'm doing and the brilliant people that I work with every day, I kind of had to learn how to say I'm visually impaired, because there's so many different words you can use. We could use I'm severely sight impaired, I'm partially sighted, I don't see very well. So I had to find the language that I was comfortable with and rolled off my tongue, if you like. And I also had to find language that helped other people engage with meeting my needs. And I think that's very personal to each of us as individuals. And I think it does take practice, and you have to almost have a little bit of a script and get comfortable with how you say what you might be experiencing, and therefore what would help you get about your day-to-day much more easily. It took me a decade to get comfortable with that.
You mentioned societal change. That is key to so many things around sight loss, you know, leveling the playing field, breaking down the barriers. That societal change has to happen. When you go to, say, apply for a job, I think sometimes you may have all the information, you may have all the answers, but it's wondering, that person or those people across the table from you, what's their perception of sight loss? What do they think a blind person or partially sighted person is capable of? Do they see that in me? Am I trying to change opinions as well as sell myself as a good job applicant?
Yeah, that absolutely is. And you want people to see you and your skills and not necessarily what might be perceived as barriers to doing a really good job. One of the things that I found, especially in my career before R&IB, employers aren't often aware what a reasonable adjustment might be. And I find that there can be this perception that it requires loads of different tech or changes to offices. And actually, some of the changes are very inexpensive or free and really just require being a bit curious about what works. Often outside of the jobs and the work that we do here, I see employers making reasonable adjustments on someone's performance. So people might be given a little bit longer to do things because they're sort of navigating around different screens or different environments. And I think that sometimes gives the perception that we can't deliver as well or as quickly. Whereas actually, with the right tools and the right adjustments, we can deliver as good, if not better, than colleagues. It fascinates me that people can read a paper with eyesight now, because I'm so used to using a reader at a ridiculous speed rate. So I think I can get through some of the material much quicker than other people that aren't using some of that assistive technology that I have. When I do look at my screen, I use a very high contrast, so I don't see color. So again, when I was at British Gas, people would rag status Excel sheets, with the color red, amber, green. And all I need them to do is write the word red, and that's accessible for me. There are all these hacks that we need to help employers and anyone across our society understand. There are easy solutions. We just need to be curious and ask the questions and understand what would help everyone that we work with.
We're chatting with Debbie Miller, the Chief Operating Officer of R&IB, learning a little bit about her sight loss journey through the career ladder, and we'll be chatting a little bit more with Debbie later.
R&IB Connect Radio.
We've been chatting with Debbie Miller, who's the Chief Operating Officer for R&IB, learning a little bit about her job past and what it's like climbing the career ladder as someone with a sight loss condition. Debbie, within R&IB, there is, I suppose, a bigger push now to get more blind and partially sighted people into work. And that's internally and externally as well. Do you think it's important that people in the positions that you're in are here telling their story about the barriers they face and how they overcame them?
Yes, I really do think that is important. I've always wanted to have a career of progression. Naturally, I don't tend to sit still. I want to make things better. I love learning. I've learned that that is part of my natural sort of makeup. So I like variety. I love learning new things. I'm really curious about all sorts of different things. And sometimes success looks a bit different. It might be a job, it might be achievements at home, supporting my family. So I've always been really committed to my own ongoing personal development. But what was interesting for me, particularly when I came and worked for R&IB and got closer to understanding the barriers that our community face. But before I worked at R&IB, I had my own barriers and I kind of felt like they were just mine because I wasn't in a community of other visually impaired people. So working at R&IB has really helped me to see the breadth of all of the things that we are working to solve. But I remember having a look to see how many visually impaired women there were at C-suite level in the FTSE 250. So they're the top 250 organizations in the UK in terms of financial income. So at that point, I was dead set on a commercial future. That's all I knew. And I couldn't find one. So for me, there was no pathway to follow. There wasn't a role model that I could look up their career and see how they'd got to that. One is there aren't enough women there, first of all, in C-suites. And number two, there was no one with a visual impairment. Either that is people have got a visual impairment but chosen not to disclose it, which I can understand given my own experiences of that, or two, there just aren't people with visual impairment at C-suite levels across that group of top 250 organisations. And I remember thinking, God, who do I look at? Because we do that, don't we? We look at people that we aspire to or have made great achievements and think about how they've done it. And so now I feel like maybe I can create that pathway and inspire and help other people think it's not just about being in employment. That's almost your basic hygiene, if that's what you want. But actually, we've got so much more to give and help us find roles and create pathways that get the best out of our talent, our experience, and our skills. So I'm committed to my own personal development journey, but also how maybe that could help others be inspired or be brave and bold and confident to disclose, help people make those adjustments for you and create the environment that helps you excel.
Is there an onus on the charities themselves to employ more people? So RNIB, more people who are blind or partially sighted, give them more support and opportunities to climb that ladder? Because if we're going to be telling other businesses this is what we should be doing, then the charity sector should be doing that within themselves as well. And I don't mean give people jobs just because they have, say, a sight loss condition. The people obviously have to have the skills and the abilities to do that. I mean, that's probably a bigger picture around education. But is there a greater onus then, especially now, that charities really look within themselves for change?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. I think all charities really need to put the lived experience of the people they exist for at the heart of what they do. So for us, it is blind and partially sighted people. I think we're seeing that more and more come through in our new purpose and really enabling our colleagues with lived experience to be key to building what that looks like going forward. So I think that's really important. It's about creating an environment that enables people to be the best version of themselves, which supports progression. So I've had that at RNIB. I've felt like I can be the best version of myself here because the environment around me is supportive, it's nurturing, I can get stuff wrong, hopefully I'll get more right. But I do think that's really important. I'm not sure the onus should sit just within the charity sector. I think sometimes the biggest difference we can make is supporting people to develop their careers in all sectors. For me, it's about finding your skill set and what gets you out of bed in the morning and really nurturing that. And then we can help support the environment around you to enable you to feel really self-assured, not being anxious about how you're going to get somewhere or what you're going to eat because you're not sure what things are and where to get them. So I think that's our part to play in creating the right environment and helping a person really develop their skills and be that best version of themselves they can be.
RNIB has the Visibly Better Employer Standard, encouraging and providing support to all sorts of businesses to employ more blind and partially sighted people and aid their career progression as well. That's been successful. That does not really a one quick fix, though, is there? You know, when it comes to having the skills in the first place, there's education, there's the ability to get that first foot on the ladder. There's having the confidence as well. You know, some people are quite knocked by the fact that they have a sight loss condition. There's a lot of things that have to get put in place before you can even look to improve their position on that ladder as well, and help and assist businesses or the third sector or the public sector, whatever, to give those opportunities.
Yeah, Alan, you're absolutely right. It's the whole environment around us and us that all needs to work together to build these opportunities. Like, I still have great days and I have really horrible days. But what I've learned is a lot of resilience, a lot of ability to solve problems because I face them every minute of every day and I can't give up. You know, I might find myself completely lost in, sometimes I get lost in rooms, you know, like if I turn a different way, I forget where the door is or what have you. I just have to work it out. You don't have an option. So I think our ability to solve immediate problems is incredible. I've learned tenacity. I've had to learn patience as well. You know, like I can't rush to a train. So I need to be really organized and really planned and be patient that I will get to where I'm meant to go, which are all incredible skills, which for an individual are fantastic. And I hope we can continue to build those skills and support, but they won't work on their own. We also need an environment that is willing to adapt and adjust. And that's really important. So things like the Visibly Better Employer Standard help those workplaces adjust and adapt. The work that we do in getting around and travel and transport helps those environments adjust, and the support that we provide around education. But we have to keep going because there are still so many gaps. And I think until that pathway to a career development, if that's what success means for you, or traveling, you know, if that's what success means to you, until those pathways are walked by more people that share their story and help others feel confident and inspired and proud and bold, we're not doing enough. We have to keep sharing these stories and do more and more and more to bring that whole holistic approach, for want of a better word, together.
Debbie, great to hear your story. Some nuggets of advice in there as well. And thank you for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Alan. I've really enjoyed talking to you.